Well, hello everyone. I'm glad to have you back again on the Prison Pod. Today we have Cardell Sims joining us, and Cardell has taken life and turned it around. He's went from being formerly incarcerated to guiding others to break free from a path of self-destruction. Today we'll learn more about his work and what the future holds for him. Welcome, Cardell.
Oh, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, I've been trying to get you on here for a while. I know you've been super busy this past year. And I guess I'm going to first have you tell us a little bit about Cardell Sims first.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I was supposed to have been on here about a year ago, I think. But I'm here now, so that's a blessing. But a little bit about me. I'm a reentry consultant. I run programs inside a correctional institution. Also, I create content. What I mean by content is curriculum, videos, and things of that nature for those that's on the inside of prison. My academy is called On the Inside Reentry Academy. Basically means it speaks on two folds. That reentry starts on the inside of prison and of self. You can't wait to get out of prison to start working on reentry. And you have to start with self. You have, you know, them the big things, whether it's past trauma or addiction or things of that nature. You have to start there. Reason why I'm in it, reentry been my life. I'm 45 years old. Ever since the age of 15 to the age of 39, I was in juvenile detention centers, foster homes, county jails, state prison, federal prison. I've been in prison 5 times. Grew up in a poverty neighborhood. My mother was 16 years old when she had me. I do have an older sister that my mother had 2 weeks before her 14th birthday. So my mother was young. My grandmother raised me. We was in a household. It was an unhealthy household. Everyone in my household, when I was growing up, either was an addict or an alcoholic. My grandmother was an alcoholic. I had an uncle that was an alcoholic, an auntie that was an alcoholic, and then my other aunties, they were addicts. By the time I was a teenager, I was gotten involved in gangs. I was born in a project, so I was kind of like I was inherited into the gang of that particular section. By the time I was a teenager, I caught my first case. 15 years old, attempted murder, first degree assault. And that's really when my almost 30-year, 25-year run with the in corrections in the system began, really. While I was in the juvenile detention center, I could play basketball at the time. So I had a lot of coaches come in and talk to the judges and speak on my behalf, explaining to my living situation that my mother was addicted to drugs. My father wasn't nowhere in the picture. And that I was almost in a sense taking care of ourselves at this time. And so the judge put me in a foster home with the stipulation I had to graduate high school. Up to this time, I was on the verge of dropping out. All my friends had already dropped out and everything. And so he gave me stipulation I had to graduate high school. I went to one foster home. It just wasn't working. Not saying the people were bad people. It's just that at the age and what they wanted me to do and what I was doing wasn't going to work. What I wanted to do wasn't going to work. They were more into going to church and things of that nature. And I wasn't prepared for that with the attitude and the mindset that I had. It was crazy because people from the neighborhood tried to come down there and fight the people. It was crazy. And so my coach and them seen that, and they was like, no, we're going to get you out of this one. So they ended up getting me in another foster home. It just so happened to be it was my AAU coach. He decided to start fostering. Well, he had already fostered in some children from his daughter. And so he just brought me in. But I still had this mentality. Like, I had this mentality for a long time that I was a product of my environment, that I had to be in the hood, that I had to be a part of, you know, what I felt like was this, what I grew up in, and crazy environment. And so this happened right before my junior year in high school. So my last 2 years in high school, I was going to school. I ended up graduating, but as soon as I graduated, I moved back to the side of the town that I grew up in. But I had a basketball scholarship to play junior college ball at home. And so I was kind of living like a double life. I would play basketball, get my education. And when I wasn't doing that, I was selling drugs, gang banging, hanging out in the projects in the hood. I caught an assault case while I was in college. My second year of college, I signed to play basketball to transfer once the season over to UNLV, University of Las Vegas, Nevada. But I lost the scholarship because I caught an assault case. So I sat in the county jail that summer for assault case. Lost that scholarship, but I end up getting a new scholarship to go down to Georgia and play basketball. So I went down there with the same mentality, though, and the same mindset and everything. So I just transferred basically what I was doing to another state. Got to Georgia playing basketball, got connected with people in the streets down there, and I was just doing the same thing. After my last basketball game, my senior year, I dropped my college, was full fledged in the streets. Then 6 months of doing that, I caught my first drug case. Sat in the county jail for 6 months, got probation, got out, went right back doing the same thing. I violated my probation because I was dropping dirty UAs. The first UA I dropped, they sent me to outpatient treatment. I dropped another dirty UA while in the outpatient, so they sent me to a 30-day outpatient like recovery house. Went did the 30 days. Came back out the recovery house, dropped another UA. They violated my probation and sent me to an institutional prison, an institutional drug program. So I go to the Department of Corrections to the institutional drug program. But while in there, some other cases came up. So I get kicked out of that treatment program, sent back because it was a judge callback. So what the treatment program, I had to do 120 days. If I completed the program, the judge will call me back and say, we're going to start you back over on probation. If you don't call me back, then I go do my prison time on my backup on my probation. So the judge come. I didn't get a chance for the judge to call me back because I called some more cases. So I had to go back to the county jail and face these new cases. And then I went to trial. I lost. I got sentenced to 19 years in the Missouri Department of Corrections. 23 years old, 19-year sentence. Going into the first prison I went to was one of the worst prisons in Missouri at the time. It was the oldest prison in Missouri, Missouri State Penitentiary, aka the Walls. Nickname was the bloodiest 48 acres. When you walked in there, they had a red receiving. Getting processed in, they had a sign on the wall and in red letters. It said, leave all your dreams and hopes behind. And that's kind of what I did when I went in there. Like I said, I'm 23 years old. I got a 19-year sentence. It's a maximum security prison, but it's a movement, maximum security. It means you're moving around. And it's an old prison, so it's tiers. And there's too many duck-offs in this. You know, it's a lot of stuff going on in here. Stabbings, fightings, I mean, people coming up missing in the prison, you know, so this is, yeah, it's crazy. And so, but this prison was on the verge of closing down, so they're transferring us to some of the newer prisons we built that was the house, the mass security. So we just opened another prison that was just opening up, and they didn't know run like a maximum security. What they did when they opened and put low security people in there, they ran a low security. So when they started transferring the loads out, loads to a state prison force, they're still running in like students, but they've been back to prisons in from about the institution and shutting down while they were in the hole. So you had enemies running to national security prison that was ran wide open. That's right. It was crazy for like the first year while they was filling in, and then end up turning into controlled movement. And so I was probably about like year four or five in, and I got a letter under my cell door that said a Senate bill passed that cut one of the times I got found, one of the crimes I got found guilty in trial for, it cut the mandatory minimum in half. So I was up for immediate parole. So I had an immediate parole hearing, and I always tell people it was the fastest parole hearing in history. The guard walked me to the parole room. He went to the restroom. I went in the room. when I walked in there, they told me, they said, Mr. Sims, you are part of the problem. You have a few more years with us. And they asked me, what did I think about institutional behavior and drug treatment? I told them I'd take the treatment because I knew the sooner I get into treatment, the sooner I get out once I complete the treatment. And so that was it. I walked out the room. The guard came out the bathroom. He told me to go in. I said, man, I already been in there. He's like, man, that's the fastest I ever seen somebody go in and out. I probably was in there about 30 seconds, no more than a minute. So exactly what they said. They gave me a few more years on my out date, but I got called up to treatment a year early. So I got out of prison a year early. When I went to treatment, before I got out, I went to treatment. And because the treatment was, you know, this is supposed to be a therapeutic community treatment, you know, cognitive thinking type treatment program, 180 days. And when I walked in there, I was running into people that I had seen throughout my time in prison, kind of like we all was about to come home and we got to go through the treatment. So the treatment program wasn't running like a treatment program was supposed to be. It was running like a prison. And so the guards and everyone took, this is what I came into. So probably like 20 days was there, the guards, the caseworkers of the whole therapeutic community, it's six floors. So they all came into our wing and shut everything down. And we went on what was called tight house. So after 180 days, 111 days, I sat in a chair with my hands on my knees, staring directly at a wall while the caseworkers go through your file and talk bad about you, your parents, children, tell you how you ain't gonna be nothing because you ain't changing your negative behaviors and criminal lifestyle, spitting sunflower seeds on the floor. It was crazy. It started out with 48 of us. When the tight house was over, it wasn't up to six of us left. Everybody else was getting kicked out. When the new people came in off the bus, they walked into our wing on tight house. The caseworker said, gave them a form. You can sign in or you can sign out, but you in tight house. People were just signing out left and right. And to understand the depthness of tight house, in the treatments in prison, they have 1,000 rules. They was going by each and every rule. So if you was and then they added rules. So if you came in on the bus and didn't know what tight house was about, and one of the rules might have been no talking. So if you came into the unit new and you on tight house and you signed in to stay here, you on a no talking contract with the rest of the unit, even though you did nothing wrong, you with the rest of the unit. But you got to figure out what's going on inside the unit. Can't nobody talk. And so if you come in and you get to talking, somebody's going, what they call a pull up. Somebody's going to pull you up and you're going to get kicked out because you ain't supposed to be talking. You don't even know you got a pull up. They're going to have a meeting. Like after lunch, we got a meeting and they say, anybody got something to say? They raise your hand and say, yeah, the new guy came in. He knew he was on the talking contract and he was just talking anyway. Just like that. So it was a crazy game. So once I got through that, I got out. But when I got out, I went right back to the same neighborhood, same block, same game. My mama's house was right in the middle of the drug spot. And I went right back to doing the same thing. As soon as I got out, I did almost 6 years.
So even though you went to this program, you really didn't get any programming while you were there.
No. I didn't do no programming at all the first prison time I went to prison.
But they gave you credit for doing the program because you stuck it out.
Yeah, because you stuck it out.
So.
And that's how.
Go ahead.
That's how the programs work. That's how the programs were back then. During that prison trip, only took, besides the treatment, only took one other program, ICVC. Impact crime victims class. And that was parole board stipulated. But outside of that, I didn't take no classes, no programs, no nothing.
So you come back out on the street, start doing the same thing you were doing, same people you were with, and what happens then?
What the recidivism rate, it says, within 1 year, I had caught another drug case. So I got a parole violation facing a new drug case as well. I got violated, sent back to prison while facing the drug case. I end up beating that drug case on the technicality. Did a year and a half in prison. I get out, right back to the same neighborhood. The exact same neighborhood, same block, same gang, doing the same thing.
And same mindset.
Same mindset. No programming in prison on a violation or nothing. Just, I can't wait to get back out.
So what happened to make a change? Because the Cardell Sims I know today is not the Cardell Sims from then.
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, I had been in prison 5 times. So, my last prison trip, you know, when I got out after I caught the case, I got out. Because I was part of the gang and we had some gang going on, I got sent back to prison for violation, and you're around other convicted felons. So, find out. Same story, same plot. But I'm following them, not arrested. The next arrest would be by the federal government. So, me and 13 other people up, conspiracy charges, gang activity, aiding and abetting, murder for hire, just a lot of different charges. And they handed me this piece of paper when we were standing in the federal courthouse in the courtroom. They handed me an indictment paper. And I really wasn't worried about the charges and the time I was facing because I hadn't seen these numbers before. What caught my attention at the top of the paper said Cardell Sims versus the United States of America. And it was just something about that that stood out to me. And at the time, I was 35 years old. I just spent from 23 years old up to this point, in and out of prison, almost 6 years here, another year and a half there, another year and a half there, another year and a half. And I was asking myself, like, man, here I am, standing in the federal courtroom, 35 years old. Why do I keep finding myself in these situations? And the only answer I came up with was myself. I told myself, you keep putting yourself in these situations. And so from that point on, just standing there, I made a silent oath to myself that I would be better when I come out of prison. Whenever I would, because I didn't know how much time I was getting. Whenever I walked out of prison on this case, I would be better than I am standing here at that present moment. And so from that point on, when they took me to the federal holdover and while I was fighting my federal case, all I did is started reading. I read book after book, educating myself. I quit reading the hood novels and stuff like that. I started Science Itself, How to Hustle to Win, Consciousness, Super Consciousness, Subconscious, How to Set Goals, Smart Goals by Brian Tracy, Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I can go on and on. But I was taking notes as well because I knew when every book that I brought in, I couldn't leave the federal holdover with. So every book that I read, it was almost like I was copying the books because I was taking notes. I didn't know nothing about setting goals and things like that. So I needed this. So when I got sentenced to 77 months in federal prison. When I got sentenced to 77 months, I sent all my paperwork home. And when I got to Leavenworth United States Penitentiary, I had my people send all the notes back in to me. I had them send that, and then I had to send my paperwork. Those who've been in federal prison, they operate, especially USPs. They are the super max or the max of the federal system. They operate off, you got to have driver's license to be on prison yard. And that driver's license is your paperwork to make sure you ain't told on nobody and things like that. So then were the two things I had sent in was my paperwork as far as to show that I ain't telling nobody and things like that. And then all of the paperwork that I was taking notes of, all the books I read. And I just continued that same regimen when I got to Leavenworth Prison. But they had programs. So now I'm trying to figure out what kind of skills and stuff I can pick up while I'm locked up. So I took a janitorial program, graduated that. I took hotel, hospitality, and lodging, graduated that class with a certificate and a degree. I'm a certified concierge PN. I got a certified concierge PN. I took a ServSafe, became qualifying the food inspections for 5 years. So I came out with that. And then I also took this class. It was called Consciousness and Success. And when I walked in there, it was talking about how to tap into your human performance, and how to tap into your acquired attributes, how to tap into the attributes that you are born with. And but the two biggest things it taught me was vision board and affirmation. So once I applied this to the regimen that I was already doing, then I started to find faith in myself. That there was one affirmation I said for 6 months. I tell this all the time when I go in institutions and do the workshop. There's one affirmation: I am greater than the situation that I'm in. Every morning I woke up, I said that for 6 months until I knew it. It wasn't that I believed it, because a lot of times belief is what we think is the truth. I needed to have faith in this, and that's what I knew the truth. I needed to know that I really was greater than the situation that I was in. I really am greater than prison. Because up to this point, all I've been through is prison. And so once I knew I was greater than prison, I would wake up every morning and everything that I had on my vision board, whether it was wanting to be a speaker, life coach, own a business, I would wake up every day and find out all I can about everything that's on my vision board, how to start a business. I will get the paperwork, fill it out. So when I get out, I already know how it needs to be filled out. And I just did that regimen all the way till I got out. And when I was released, that's all I had. No money, just that vision board and all the notes, the plans, the goals. And they sent me to the halfway house. The halfway house gave me a bus pass and a list of jobs. And I've been sticking to that vision board and them goals for the past, it was 5 years. So I just went back to the goal sheet because I'm on my 6 year out. But everything that I'm doing and have done up to this point has been on that vision board.
Now, have you worked a regular job, or has this become your job? When I say a regular job, a job for somebody else.
So now this has become my job. But now it wasn't like that when I got out. Like I said, they handed me a list of jobs in a halfway house. I knew one thing when I was locked up: I wasn't working in no manufacturing, no factory company, because I knew it wasn't me, and I knew that was going to be a setup for failure for me. So it was already in mind. I'm not working in no factory. I believe this, and I tell this to my class: I don't want you to go out and get a job just because someone wants you to get a job. I want you to go out and find and do something that you like to do and that you're interested in, because you won't look at it as a job. If you just go out there and just get a job because someone said it doesn't fit you, it doesn't fit your personality, you're going to end up quitting. And if you like me, all it took was that one job for me to quit. That was my one excuse that I needed to use to get back into the streets. So I knew that I wasn't taking no factory job. So when they handed me this list, it had all factory jobs on here and one telemarketer job. I went over to the telemarketing place. The guy had me read a script. I read it. He said, "Man, you start tomorrow." Went there the next morning. They had a team meeting. And in the team meeting, they was doing affirmation and listening to Eric Thomas and Tony Robbins. I said, "Oh, this is where I need to be." And so what I got out of that, because I wanted to be a speaker, that telemarketing and reading them scripts helped me become a better speaker and helped me pronunciate my words better and read things more clear. So now I'm able to rebuttal quickly. It taught me that as well. So my job was, I'm calling people, are they calling in, and I'm trying to get them to get out of their timeshares. That was what I did for telemarketing, to get them signed up to get out of their timeshares. So I worked that job. I was in a halfway house for 4 months. So I would get up at 5 o'clock, ride the bus to get to work at 7. Go to work from 7 to 2, ride the bus back to the halfway house, get there about 4. I would eat the lunch, the dinner that they had prepared. Then they had two computers in the computer lab. I would get on the computer lab. I would type up some books that I wrote. Well, I would spend an hour typing up books that I wrote. Then I would spend another hour I had found an online life coaching courses. So I would take them courses. Then I would work out for an hour. I'd go to sleep. And I do that every day over and over. All at the halfway house. Mind you, though, 7 months making less than an hour. We're paid to get 7 weeks. So this is how I was very close. I was making $4 a week. Let's do the math. Just 440. That's we starting off at 440. Add taxes to that. We're looking at probably about 340, 350. Then I owe $699 a month in child support, which took half of that 350. So I'm managing all 175 a week. And so I got a budget in this. I knew this coming out of prison. So I had this written down. You know, I don't know how much you're going to make, but let's say you're making $10 to $12 an hour. You're going to have to know how to budget your money because you know you got the child support. And so I already had a budget and a plan. So I didn't take and go spend my money. I went right to Walmart. I bought the $5 sweats, $20 shoes, and things like that, everything that I needed. And I shopped like I was still in prison when it came to getting food. I budgeted my money down like I was getting stuff off commissary. And that's just how I had to budget my money. So if I had to spend $50 on groceries, I had a list of what I was getting all the way down to $50. Well, 2 cents, 10 cents under 50. But that's how I was when I was in prison. When I went to commissary, I didn't get a lot of money. I would budget. You know, if I got $40, I'm writing my commissary list. Yeah, I'm getting it. So that was budgeting. A lot of times we in their budgeting and didn't realize it. And so once I got out the halfway house, I had a life coaching, one life coaching diploma. I had two books typed up, and I had a logo for a business of the company that I want to start. And so once I got out of there, I was on halfway house for two more months before I became public law. And once I became public law, I filed for my business license and I started my life coaching company. But what I would do was host my own speaking engagements for free. And I would sell my books and t-shirts at these speaking engagements. And at the same time, I would work in at 5 a.m. at Dollar Tree stocking shelves. And I would work as a sales associate at a sporting goods store. And I did that for a year, and I moved. I did that for a year. Now, it wasn't even a year. It's probably like 6 months, and I moved because another thing I knew, I couldn't stay at home because every time I went home, I always went back to prison. So I went home for a short, brief period of time to save up some money and move, and then I moved. And I went to a whole nother different city. I didn't really know no one there but one person, and I knew they was a business growing city. And on my vision board, I wanted to be a business owner. So I'm with a new business and I moved to another place and I get another job doing marketing and promoting inside of at home and garden shows, inside Sam's Club, Price Shoppers, things like that, getting people to sign up for home improvement. And this was the biggest job, the most important job that I had up to this point. Because this is I've been out of prison for 1 year when I got this job. And so what this job did was it helped me be more of a people's person. And because I had to ask about 1,000 people every day, it helped me understand when it came to business, it helped me understand, okay, everything has a number. If I ask this many people, usually if I ask 500 people, I'm going to get 1 or 2 people to sign up. So every day I'm asking thousands of people. Many different ways asking them how do they need any home improvement on their house, and they're telling me no in many different ways. So now I had to come up with ways, creative ways, to get the lead, and which will help me later on in business. But the most important thing, it taught me how to interact with people, and that coming out of prison, I didn't know I didn't have that great
interaction with people. That is precious in itself, because that's one thing that I find with so many that I have worked with. They never answer the phone. Never. They let it go to voicemail and then they text them. You know, that, and it's all fear of the unknown when it comes to that stuff. I got to back up way back for a second. Books. You started talking about the books. I'm curious, can you remember the first book you picked up?
The first book I picked up when I made that change was
How to Hustle
How
and
to
Win.
Hustle and Win.
I always
How to
like to
Hustle and Win.
go ahead.
And then from that, yeah, that was it. They got part one and part two. So I read part one, and then somebody ordered part two, or read part two, and then that author had other books. It had Knowledge Itself and Science Itself. And so I ordered them two books. That's when I started digging into self, and understanding, brains. Like, man, you'd be surprised, the books that I read and the stuff that I picked up that played a lot. But those books played a lot. That education played the biggest
One
part in
thing
my
I
transformation.
found when I went back to school, I just thought I was going to learn about the stuff in the books. I had no idea I was going to learn so much about myself. Because it opens
You're
up other
right.
doors and other ways of thinking. And that's what we need to do when we're on the wrong path. We need to change our way of thinking. We need to create new habits and we need to set goals. So now I'm going to go fast forward because I want to cover a little bit about your empowerment workshop that you did this past year, because that in itself is an amazing feat.
Right. And so the reason why I did the workshop, because I run the program physically here in Missouri. I run two virtual programs in Arizona as well. In my program on the it's a personal development, like I said, on the Inside Reentry Academy. Reentry starts on the inside of prison and the self. So we do personal development. But in my class and in my academy for them 26 weeks, you just don't get me. So I bring in other successful formerly incarcerated individuals to come in, share their story. They come in, they host like a workshop in my class for themselves of how they became successful. So one day I said, I want to take this style, but I want to do a one day workshop across the country. I woke up, it was late December last year of 2020. I said, 2023, I want to take my program, but I want to turn it into a full day workshop. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. And we was talking about working. So this is where I made the transition to bet in on myself, because I had mentors and stuff to tell me, let go of your job. You're not going to go hard as you think you are. You got to let go of the job. And at this time, I'm not in the marketing. I'm working for FedEx because COVID had hit, and it knocked out that face-to-face work. So COVID, so I had to get a job. I got working for FedEx, and they was like, "Yeah, you got to let that go." And so when I came up with the tour, I said, "I'm just gonna bet in on myself," and I let all of that go, and just said, "If this is what I'm supposed to be doing, doors, God's gonna open doors. I just gotta trust the process." And so I bet in on myself in December. I quit my job and said, 2023, I'm gonna do a tour. I ain't had no funding for it or anything. I remember talking to Steve, and I was telling Steve about, like, how you gonna do that? You got some money and funding? He said, "Nah, man, I'm just gonna trust the process. If this is what I'm supposed to be doing, God's gonna open the doors." Nobody, people, only very few people who've been following me knew who I was in the reentry field and the work that I've been doing. But a lot of people didn't. But when I announced the tour, I started people trying to figure out how I was going to do this. Like, who is this guy? What are you talking about? He's going to 100 prisons and he's doing it for free. That was the big thing. Like, he's doing it for free. He's not charging the prisons, the institution. So, but I knew from building, getting my programs in prisons, I knew one of the biggest things the institutions always say, we know what it is. We don't have no funding. We don't have no funding. They say that before you even say anything. We don't have no funding, And so in order to even cut out, I didn't even want to hear that. And you know what I'm saying? I don't even want to hear no excuses. I need you to open the doors. I know a lot of reentry educators, people who's devoted like I am to this, who are willing to come in and showcase. And so I just told them we're doing it for free. All we need you to do is open the door. They was like, what? And so then I had people reaching out to me, and I reached out a few educators. And for me, this is where it showed who was really sincere about wanting to make an impact and who was wanting to just want to check. And so when I reached out to people, I had people asking, was they getting paid and all this. So everybody that you see on the team or on the tour, go in on this tour with, go in this prison, they go in because they got money, got no money. They just said, go. And so, you know, when I had the people that was ready to go and I had the institution, it was just simply putting a date together. I had a lot of people say they was going to sponsor, they want to do this, they want to do that. At the end of the day, nobody did nothing. I had a couple, I ain't gonna say nobody, because I do have to say I had people, regular followers, you know, they went to the webpage and they donate $20, $50, $100. But as far as like all the businesses and all these companies that reached out to us in the beginning or reached out to me in the beginning and they want to be involved, they want to be a part when it was time to put up, they didn't want to do nothing. They wanted me to go in there and pitch state services that they had for correctional institutions, whether it was something for the tabney that has to do with a career matching, or, you know, where it was somebody had some coffee brand they wanted to get inside the institution. Like, yeah, a lot of people that came and like, yeah, we going in, but it didn't. So everybody that went on the tour with us, we all funded it out of our own pocket. And I remember, I'm quitting FedEx out of this. So every trip I went to, God opened the door and made a way for me to get there and do what I do. And he made a way. So far, we've done seven states in all about 20-something workshops.
Just think of how many lives that you're helping change. You and the people that are working with you. You know, that's truly, if you want to say God's work. So now I hear that there's this, you have a whole program you've developed, and has it rolled out yet, or is it in the process of?
No, it hasn't rolled out yet. It's in the process. Programming, for me, program is a thing, and I try to team up with the sincere people. And what I represent and what I'm about, I met one person who is live living proof of that, about doing what you're doing, reentry starting on the inside, and that was Steve. When I first met the conversation, we were just having the conversation. Then he said, Cardell, you know, did you know I'm incarcerated? And I'm like, what? And he's like, you know, but I'm thinking about all the things that we talked about up to this moment. The degrees he accomplished during the debate, the awakening and things like that. And I'm thinking he's doing a lot. And then he's getting me incarcerated. And I'm man, he's going to do inside people out here doing actually signing for. When I got the election, I can put in money to me to help put the curriculum on the program, the way to where the program, the industry code, we have a lot of entry, but that the experience know what it takes to be the justice of the street. So, you know, we really, people receiving been on the justice code. They're going to start training down those iron bears. We created those companies. That's why I'm saying I hope for women with them. They don't have any coaching because those on the scene, those strong game momentum on the field. A lot of these people, we're starting to coach, getting in the field, like coaches moving to the field. 5 years, years without 15 years, still don't understand differently than someone who's done 30 years that 20 years in prison, prison, and is one with someone that you did let off. You can't, you got that, but you
can't. You can't overlook lived experience. I mean, and you can learn a lot in a book, but it's not the same thing as going through it. I mean, even as much time as I spent going into the prisons, I had a very good understanding of what went on in there. But that being said, I didn't live there. I got to go home at night. So, you know, so I have a perspective, that's my perspective, but I certainly could not coach somebody who had been 25 years in, like somebody who had done that time themselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what we don't want to see. I mean, yeah, we're going to need the coaching, but we're one of, we created this platform to make sure that those coaches are well equipped to be coaching someone who's coming out of a institution, someone who's returning back into society. This is not, it's a whole nother different, this is a whole nother different animal. It really is. And people, and if you're a regular coach and you're not even working in the reentry field, or you're not up on it, you don't say you have no type of compassion or understanding, but that you want to be that, you're going to have a hard problem. And you won't be successful as a coach in this field. You just won't. You just don't. So we created that program specifically for that reason. Very well put together. Steven did an amazing job, you know, and with the educators that we have, with the coaches that we have. I can't wait until we bring this out and get this started, because it's going to be well needed. But I think what we all must remember is it's really not about the coaching. It's about the mentorship. I've seen Van Jones. I've seen an interview. Van Jones said he was sitting in the room with a bunch of billionaires, and Jay-Z was one of them, and they was talking about reform and things like that. And while everybody's talking, Jay-Z said, "I just got one question." And he asked him this question, and he asked all these billionaires, he said, "Were you supervised into being a better person?" And they was like, "What?" He's like, "Was you supervised into being a better person?" And they was like, "No." He was like, "No, you was mentored into being a better person. Into being from where you come from to where you was mentored." He said, "That's where we need to focus on the reform, stuff like that." I'm like, "Well, that's all I've been doing. That's what I've been doing the whole time I've been is I'm mentoring. I'm going there being a mentor. I'm not looking at you at your crime. I'm mentoring you on what it's going to take for you to be successful."
Okay, so now the next question for you is the men and women that are listening to this right now that say, "Man, I got all these years ahead of me. It's a waste of time. There's nothing I can do." What would you suggest first thing that they do?
Continue to apply themselves and don't and get rid of that attitude. That's the first one. That's not bad. First of all, that's that. Get rid of the attitude. If you don't get that attitude, then you're not going to get nowhere. You got to have the attitude. Then you got to start tapping into yourself and tapping into your creativity and the God-given abilities on what you can do to impact right now. For those, you know, we're going to win. Like, I'm, you know what I'm saying? We're going to win. And like with Andre Norman, you know, we go in and we see guys going, they might got life. They might be in there all day on death row. But they can make an impact. They can create a program to say, you know what, when the young guys come in, we got this program. But we're going to put the young guys through. We're going to see what they got. Do you need, what do you need for you to come in, change your life around, and be ready for when you get out? Because we in here all day. You know, you don't want to be in here all day. So they should be starting a program where through institution, tell the institutions, get a hold of party, or I can come in here and help. We sit down with you. But create a program to say, okay, when these young guys come in, we're going to see where they at. Do they got the education or not? We're going to make sure they get enrolled in GED. Do they got any kind of vocational skills or things like that? We're going to mentor these new guys coming in and start preparing them for when they get released, instead of letting them come around, sit around, not doing nothing with themselves, getting in more trouble, catching more cases on the inside. And then they will get the fulfillment of making an impact, changing, if they just change one person's life around, have them prepared and things like that. And then they have a program amongst themselves that they can find a way just to get back and make an impact.
And that's how about some of your materials, your books and workbooks and whatever? Are those available to people in prison? Can they get those like on Amazon?
Yeah, they can. Almost all material that I release is for those on the inside. They can go to Amazon. I have workbooks that go to my website, CardellSims.com. I have a personal development workbook. That's one of the ones I use for my class. I have a creating a mindset shift workbook. I also have a anger book. They can get them. They can photography from my inmates to kids in their attitude are the keys that I'm just keep mindset for my chat to happen to my had a, you know, the right attitude, created a vision, started educating myself, and then I hustle just simply working hard. And then I also have an affirmation book. I can, I will, I do, I am. And it just talks about that. I got 90 affirmations that I use while incarcerated and the stories behind them affirmations as well.
Is there anything else that you can think of that we should cover before we close out?
I just want to say that, you know, for those on the inside, you know, just continue to better yourself and tapping into to yourself and your creativity. We have amazing creativity, ingenuity, you know, and because I've been locked up, I've seen some of the amazing things. And I would say those on the inside is to don't wait for the institution to provide the programs. When you all start providing programs, in there for yourself, just got to tap into it. And for the family members, I would say, you know, hey, I understand it's hard. I understand some bridges were broken, but, you know, be there for your loved ones, give them a second chance, don't enable them, but give them some guidance, some hope. And I also want to say this, because, I think as those who understand, I've been incarcerated, but I'm almost a parent of it. My oldest son is in prison. You know, just the effects of my life, how it, you know, went down. But as someone who has a loved one in prison, I want to say, yeah, the prisons and conditions and stuff aren't great, and the prisons do a lot of crazy bad things. But always remember, what is it your loved one is in there doing? They bury themselves in this prison time. Because sometimes we be complaining, and I love one, because my mom and them used to complain about the conditions of the jail and stuff like that. I wasn't in jail doing nothing to better myself or anything like that. So in order to do, you know, make sure that your loved one has some kind of plan that they're doing to better themselves. And a lot of times we wait on the institutions to do it. We have to start taking the step forward to getting them the proper material that they may need on the inside, instead of waiting for those prisons to do it or those jails to do it. We have to start taking the initiative on our own to start preparing for our loved ones' release. But we got to make sure that they're in there doing something or trying to do something productive with themselves, not just in there.
Perfect ending.
Trying to become a you better did a
great,
criminal like I was
great
the
first interview today. I'm very, very happy with what we've talked about today. There's so much that needs to be done out there to make change. around reentry. You mentioned Stephen, and I want to say that we've been talking about Stephen Matthew Clark, who is doing some amazing work out of the Maine State Prison with the Awakening Exchange. And many people that listen to the podcast are aware of the Awakening Exchange. I'm hoping you'll hold on for just a moment while I close out, and I'll catch you in a second. I want to thank everyone for joining us today on the Prison Pod. We've had Cardell Sims here, and I'm going to spell his name so you can get it right. It's K-A-R-D-E-L-L, and Sims is S-I-M-S. He has some great materials out there for you to read and work on while you're inside. So, as I often say, pick up a book. It could change your life.